All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Hey, Device Talks, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks here on the stage of Device Talks West, being joined by my co-hosts, Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor of Device Talks, and Chris Neumarker, award-winning journalist from Mass Device. We'll give you an award.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I've had awards.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
I mean, I've been doing this long enough. You get awards.
I've never gotten an award.
No, come on.
I've never gotten an award.
No, not even like a SBJ page.
No, not even that.
No, serious.
All right, we don't need a therapy session right now.
It's okay, Tom. Let's work through this.
No, it's okay. Right. I am my own award.
your award is, you know, these Device Talks shows that you've built and furthered over the years.
That's right. I give. So anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about Device Talks West. We're joined by our friends at from Infor. We have Steve Phil. Steve, you're the Vice President of Sales?
Yes, sir.
You're right. And Alexis, you are your title? Your full name and title. I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh,
we just talked about
absolutely.
Notes.
I'm
take
Alexis
my notes.
Taylor Moores. You know, my social security number is...
Go ahead.
Go on.
Yeah.
Just kidding. No, I'm a senior account manager at Infor. I handle our life science division.
That's great. And we've been working with Infor on a few different projects, and you've been supporters of our Device Talks events, so we're very grateful about that. We're going to talk a bit about one of your the event or the part of the event that you were most involved with today or the past 2 days, which was the presentation by NVIDIA's Mostafa Tulluhi.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. No, it was, I mean, NVIDIA just got such energy to it right now. They're rock stars. So it was great to have him kick things off. Before we do, though, just so folks have a perspective, I'll hand it off to either one of you. Just a minute about Infor. What does Infor do?
Sure. Thank you. So Infor is we're part of the Koch Industries business, and Infor is predominantly known for our ERP business, but within that ecosystem lies Cloverleaf. Mm-hmm. And Cloverleaf is the market leader in interoperability and creating a integration with disparate healthcare systems.
Okay. And Alexis, what are some of the customers you're working with at Infor? This is a podcast. I've always said Infor. Is it Infor? Am I saying
Infor? Just like information.
Nomation.
Yeah,
Nomation. No, Infor. Infor. Stop right there. Okay, Infor.
Well, of course, you know NVIDIA, as was mentioned. We do work pretty heavily in the medtech area as well as hospital systems. We're in about 40% of hospital systems in North America. We also work with biotech pharmaceutical companies, but outside of that, you know, from our standpoint, it's really the life sciences side of the industry. So quite a few individuals that were actually here this week and presenting are customers of ours. Yeah. And it was a great opportunity to actually connect with some of our customers, you know, Abbott, I believe Boston Scientific, couple others that were here this week,
and it was Boston Scientific. We had Phillips. It was a good crowd.
Phillips, yeah, yeah.
Wonderful.
That's great. No, it's great to have you here. And well, let's start off at the top.
Pumpkin.
Do we want to get into pumpkin? We kind of went into the.
No, we were suggesting it on LinkedIn.
But well, we did promise it on LinkedIn. So Chris and I have a stance against pumpkin flavored. Foods. Pro or con? What do you think?
You know, my daughter is absolutely hooked on those pumpkin spice lattes.
Uh-oh. So,
I mean, it's... Yeah.
She and Chris have something
in
common.
It's a $7 a day habit.
So Tom was picking me up in the van and was like, I'm stopping at Starbucks. And like, just to joke with him, I was like, you know, well, give me a pumpkin spice latte. And he's like, are you kidding? And I was like...
I was in line. I'm like, don't joke about this right now. Do you want something? I'm like, they're waiting for the order.
Yeah, you're coming to pick me up. And I was like, you know, actually, I haven't had one yet this fall. You know, pick me up one. You know, you're like, you've been...
So one pumpkin. You've been corrupted by big pumpkin. We know that's true.
Next up is pumpkin spiced pup cups for the dogs.
Slippery slope.
You met your quota.
Right.
Yeah. And Alexis, pro pumpkin or anti pumpkin?
No, I'm actually not. That's what's funny. You know,
you're not anti or not?
Family, kids, my husband, military, special forces, puts on his Uggs, goes to Starbucks, gets his pumpkin everything.
All right, well, I will stop bad-mouthing pumpkin right now. Special forces. I love pumpkin. Pumpkin's great.
Really?
It's great.
I like pumpkin bread.
Yes. No, pumpkin bread.
I like pumpkin bread, but I'm just not the latte.
Yeah, good pumpkin bread.
Right?
You know, I do love a seasonal snack and a seasonal drink, but as usual, Tom, I never go the way you're going to think I go. So no on pumpkin, yes on apple cider latte. That's my seasonal jam.
Apple cider, I mean, yeah. That's the other great fall flavor.
That's a good choice.
And we agreed maple as well, because maple is just a
little. Oh, yeah. Maple all day, every day.
Oh, yeah. Maples.
All right. So that was the big scandal. Chris Neumarker.
Huge scandal.
Indulged himself. It was a small iced latte. So we'll let it pass. So I'm glad you got that out of your system. Anyway, NVIDIA. Let's start off with Mustafa Tilloui's opening presentation. Very well attended. A lot of folks obviously following that company. Steve, help us understand sort of first. I know you're doing work with NVIDIA. You made an announcement earlier this week about that. But what was your takeaway from Mustafa's presentation?
You know, the biggest takeaway that I have from that presentation is the future is now. I think when you hear a bunch of what he had to say, people think it's a year or two or 5 years out or a decade out. That's not the case. I think that right now there's 1,000 FDA cleared AI powered medical devices.
Wow.
With almost 250 coming in 2024. So it's. We're here, and spending some time with the NVIDIA team and being able to see, you know, the work that we've done together in just a short period of time, Tom, our collaboration with NVIDIA essentially started at Device Talks Boston.
Woohoo!
Whoa, whoa,
look
rewind.
At us.
You know,
so
from Device Talks Boston to Device Talks West, the progress that we made working together, you know, is amazing. I spent some time with Christiana Denea earlier this week. She's one of the software engineers working on the project. And if you see some of the generative AI that we're putting into medical devices, it's just inspiring. Mm-hmm. To work with a team of that horsepower is just, it's amazing. It's a privilege to be a part of this entire kind of collaboration and partnership. And we're here. You know, by the time we're at Device Talks Boston next year, you can see where the progress is just, it's going to be exponential. So it's an exciting time for Infor right now, and to have a partner with NVIDIA
it's
really special. Thank you.
That's great. It seems to be the silver bullet. We've been talking about the amount of data being generated by devices. How are we going to use it? How are we going to handle it? How are we going to control it? You can't be sifting through all this data. Physicians are already overwhelmed. So AI that's able to process that in a clear manner seems to be, again, the magic bullet as to what we exactly needed at the moment.
Yeah, and another takeaway that I had when I listened to Andy Pierce's keynote, they were like maniacally focused on really starting with kind of that patient caregiver experience and working backwards to solve some of those challenges. And I think you're seeing that at play with the work we're doing with NVIDIA. We're working with the chief of surgery at the Orlando VA to help us kind of understand those preoperative, intraoperative, and postoperative challenges that can really be solved through some of this AI capability. Mm-hmm. And she's 100% right. And so when we first started down this path, I think everybody sees, the kind of that surgical co-pilot and some of the stuff that could be done intraoperatively. But when you really look at the resources, and I think, you know, Andy hit the nail on the head of the nurses that are burned out, the caregivers that are just, there's just not enough of them right now. And by looking at some of these preoperative workflows and postoperative workflows that can truly be tuned up by some of this AI capabilities, and it's magic. It's just wonderful.
That's great.
See this thing come to life as quickly as it has really been an incredible achievement.
Andy was talking about the burnout of nurses in hospitals as sort of an explanation as to why they made the Vocera acquisition.
Yeah.
We always kind of look at this kind of as almost like a professional sport game or a sporting event where, they bought this because of that, because it fits into here. He kind of flipped it on its head a bit by saying, we're listening to customers. This is what they need. That's why we went and bought that company. It wasn't part of this long-term vision or strategic plan other than we want to serve our customers. Alexis, we talked to the medical device companies about their interest in AI, and they have capital, they have resources, they can sort of take the time to understand it and to really I think, make it part of what they do. How about on? Can you kind of speak to the hospital provider side? Do they also have an understanding of what they need AI-wise, and are they able to sort of meet the medical device companies in the middle and use the information that they're getting from medical devices that are sort of the data that's managed by AI or processed by AI?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the way that a hospital system works, it can get chaotic, right?
Yeah.
And I particularly think about it from the administrative side, right? So administration and hospitals is trying to make sure they have the workforce that's there necessary for different surgeries or just your day-to-day. So if you can take the information that's coming from AI in a variety of different capacities and be able to consume that and make it as a clinical decision support system to say, hey, you know, this is our heightened time. This is when we need to make sure that we're staffed for X, Y, and Z. This is the surgery that we're seeing more often than not come mm-hmm. in through the ER, what have you. Being able to see that from that perspective, from the hospital system, and being able to use AI as basically an additional brain machine that operates on a capacity that's significantly higher than what probably all five of us could mm-hmm. even imagine, yep. you know, that's just, it's astronomical of what can be done there.
I mean, I feel like we're at a point like we were with the internet 25 years ago when everything was like, oh, internet-based this, internet-powered that, and Kaylin, you're our resident AI expert, so I should allow you to make that point because you made it before, too. But now we don't even talk about the internet. It's just ingrained in all we do. Kaylin, you've been doing Device Talks AI. You've been really tracking how AI is getting incorporated into medical devices. What was your takeaway from that talk, or was there something else you picked up during the event that kind of sparked the AI part of your brain?
Yeah, you know, I think that you couldn't be more right. So had you asked me that a year ago, I think that I would have given you specific examples. But today, as you said, it's so ingrained in everything that we say, the way that we move forward, that's just a natural part of now med tech. And it happens so quickly, to your point, Alexis. Like, I don't think anybody anticipated it to happen so quickly. I was shocked that when I first, for the keynote with NVIDIA, that there was 700 plus AI-enabled FDA approvals, and then I find out that we're at 1,000 yeah. in this session alone. So, I mean, I think that communicates better than anything how quickly artificial intelligence is being ingrained, integrated into the medical device industry. And I think if I have to really diffuse it and, like, bring it down to, like, one statement, what artificial intelligence is doing for all of us is it's allowing the care teams, it's allowing those who are the stakeholders, they're allowing us all to be more human, mm-hmm. which I think is changing the medical device industry in the way that I always wanted to see it go. I wanted us to be more human, to care for our loved ones in a way that we don't have the time or the resources for, to care for those who don't have the same accessibility that maybe we have here on the stage today. So when I think of artificial intelligence, I'm excited, I'm hopeful, yeah. and I see us just having the opportunity to care for more people in more meaningful ways. Right. It's such a privilege.
It's funny that you say more human, though, with it, because you would think it's almost a contraindication there, where you think it would be the polar opposite with it being AI, but you're absolutely right. It really does. It allows for that. And it allows for more patient interaction, because it takes away a lot of those workflows that can be done in a different way through using AI, and gives more time to have that true face-to-face interaction that needs to be had, that I think is just so hard to come by right now. It's just everybody's getting pulled in so many different directions. So if we can use something like Holoscan and be able to have a summation of what happened in surgery, you know, done through AI, and take that, you know, hour or what have you away from the surgeon that they would have had to sit there and type up all of their notes and think through all of the processes and make sure they didn't miss anything. And if they're anything like me, probably wake up in the middle of the night like, oh no, I forgot that part.
You do that too.
You gotta go back and add that, you know, if you think about it. But just back to your point, that's exactly what it does. It allows us to be more human, which is just, it's funny that it adds up that way, you know?
Well, like in healthcare and so many other places, we have all these like rote industrialized tasks that are dehumanizing. And mm-hmm. like an artificial intelligence offers the chance that it could take those over and allow us to spend more time being human beings, which happens to usually make people happier anyways.
When it's funny too, you think about it, so many patients are like, well, I'm just a number. And I work a lot in the clinical trial setting too. Just a number. I'm just a number. Well, it allows it for the patient to be more than a number. It allows them to have their journey understood by their care provider, which is a rarity.
You know, it's interesting, the phrase, you know, the future is now. I mean, I agree with it, but at the same time, there's just so much more that needs to be done. I mean, there's a panel today that, you know, that Philips had about digitizing radiology. And I mean, only 10% of like U.S. hospitals right now have their like radiology, not radiology, digitizing pathology. I'm sorry. Mm. Digitizing of pathology. Only 10% of hospitals have pathology digitized. Like the rest of them, they're still using the glass slides. I mean, if you're a oncology patient and you want to get a second opinion at another health system, you're, you know, asking them to mail those slides to that health system so they can look at them again. So, I mean, there's still a lot to do, a lot to do.
Wow.
But changing quickly.
I hope so.
But changing quickly.
You know, I have to say that, I tend to be the positive one. I can't help it.
Like, where does that put me?
I'm all rainbow and unicorns every time. So I see what you're saying, Chris, and I'm going to counter. There is a lot more to be done. However, what I'm finding more than anything, especially Device Talks Plus, and this was brought up to me actually by my Device Talks twin, Amira Weiniger, who's in the audience today, that there was an unofficial theme of the Women in MedTech luncheon, which was meaningful connections. And so what popped in my mind when you were speaking, Chris, is there's a lot to be done, but a shift that I have noticed, and it's been really emphasized this week for me, is that these meaningful connections are coming together because now there's more time, more resources because of artificial intelligence and other, you know, innovations and advancements that organizations and people are coming together to move health forward. And I have so many different examples just from today alone. So we had, fabulous BCI robotics conversation with, it was a partnership between Neurolutions and Can Do Health. So talking from the stroke survivor and aftercare. So taking the entire patient journey and continuum. So two organizations that were really standalone coming together with these meaningful connections to provide better care and after treatment care. And that's really important. Organizations such as ShifaMed, which they are a med tech incubating company, and they find a problem that needs to be solved, and then they strategically build out an organization. They have a team come together and bring the product from concept to transferring that innovation to, you know, whatever organization acquired it, but the team goes with it. So then they get to follow that pathway. So it's really, yes, a lot needs to be done, but through artificial intelligence, it provides more time for meaningful connections, which to me tells me that we are moving forward in the right way, and it's going to happen faster and faster and faster.
Let's talk about surgical robotics. It's a bit of an adjacency, but we had Virtual Incision speak. We had Moon Surgical speak. We had Laza Medical speak earlier, and I'm sorry, I missed that. And Neurolutions had a robotic element to it as well. What really struck me with both Virtual and Moon and the fact that these startups, we're watching the larger companies, J&J and Hugo, sort of make the next iteration of Da Vinci or the next iteration of the big. These folks have just kind of leapfrogged all of that and are just creating brand new models that are getting traction, they're getting approval, and that are moving forward. And I just feel as if there's, we're talking about AI, and that's going to be one of the logs in this fire that's really driving surgical robotics forward, and that's pretty obvious. We had talked in the Greenberg panel about patent protection, that Intuitive Ones had that's expiring, and I raised the question as to whether or not that was opening doors for startups, and Chris Bolton, the attorney, wasn't prepared to say that, but I'm a podcaster, so I can say it, and no one can hold me accountable, because I think it's just interesting that we're seeing all this innovation now, 20 years after their first patent wall is beginning to fall. So, Stephen, I mean, we are at a point where I think there's just a lot of energy flowing into surgical robotics and a lot of different sources. And I think this area is just going to, like, 5 years from now, we're going to be amazed at what we're seeing. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. When you know, traditionally, these medical device companies are manufacturing companies. They're creating hardware, but it has really shifted dramatically. Now they are software-defined organizations, right? They're software-defined, AI-enabled companies that can just innovate at lightning speed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that was one of the key takeaways that Mustafa started off the Device Talks keynote with, is AI-enabled, software-defined, robotic. Those three elements are critical for medical device companies to continue to push the needle and drive performance.
Well, it kind of says something that the, like, Holoscan plug-and-play AI platform, yes, they have. I mean, one of the examples that he showed of where it's already been used was the development of, you know, Moon Surgical's robots.
Correct.
So, I mean, that's very cool.
Yeah, what Moon Surgical's doing, they are on just an incredible trajectory. It was great to hear your story a couple years ago about David Moon and David. You know, running and kind of, you know, doing some things at some hospital, just literally bootstrapping, running and doing a presentation, and then back to the bootstrapping efforts. But that has paid off.
Yeah, no, and David, for those not who were foolish enough not to attend Device Talks West, David Fallon revealed that when he spoke here 2 years ago, the day before, he had just received an FDA demand that they do a usability study. So he was, and they do it in a very short span of time. I forget if it was like a week or some ridiculous amount of time. So he was initially like, oh my God, I got to cancel. I can't go talk tomorrow, but I'll go talk. And then when he mentioned that, I'm like, you know what? He did look like pale when he was up there. Like, he looked like he wasn't, he was there and he was great, but you could see, like, huh, there's something else in the back of his mind. And then to your point, yeah, I think he went out, they put a
something
maestro
on his
in a van,
yeah,
and
yes,
then like just drove around and kind of gave gift cards to these nurses and said, come use it, and give us the data we need.
Amazing, so, right?
And yeah, and that's what startups are able to do. And we had a discussion with Nisha Medical yesterday as well, talking about flexible robots and the ability of the new materials that are coming out and the new controls, that where they're able to go in the body and work their way around edges and really get to places that robots haven't gotten before. And whether that was going to be the gold standard or whether we're still going to have rigid robots, and I think the feeling was that we'll have both. We'll have robotics, surgical robotics that are rigid, but also those new types that can get to that clot that no one else can get to. So that's another, I think, another innovation we're seeing that's going to move surgical robotics forward.
Well, today I interviewed the CEO of, you know, Savato, and they've got like a software as a service, like, you know, telecom ecosystem that they're making, you know, to, you know, like, you know, kind of enable, you know, telesurgery, and that could like open up whole new doors that, you know, you could, you know, station a robot at, you know, a more remote hospital, yeah, and like a surgeon with skills could like do an operation, you know, in that hospital, you know, from elsewhere.
Democratizing access.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Kind of like what Virtual Incision was talking about, where they had their surgeon in Nebraska and their robot at the space station, International Space Station, and was able to control it from Nebraska. I thought that was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it seems
mind-boggling.
Yeah, and Silvato has been like using Virtual Incision robots, like they've been like working with those to do like surgery. I mean, right now they're operating on pigs, but still, I mean, it's like, okay, great. There's like a pig in San Francisco that somebody in Chicago is like operating on. I mean, that's very cool. It's really interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Especially when you're thinking about, you know, somebody that needs a specialist, but needs the specialist now. You know, we can't get that flight there. What are our other options that solves for that?
Right, living in Minnesota, I mean, there are people from all over the world who, you know, come to Mayo Clinic, you know, down in, you know, Rochester, Minnesota. I mean, you know, like yeah, think of what if some of the surgeons at Mayo could be, you know, doing, you know, procedures like, you know, around the world.
Yeah.
That's what I had asked John Murphy, the CEO of Virtual Incision. Like, do you have any idea what impact this is going to have on healthcare? Forget about, I mean, the larger robots, you're putting it into an existing OR at a hospital in Boston or wherever, and it's just sort of moving everything forward just a bit. But if you can give everyone a mirror and you can connect them remotely, what does a hospital look like? What is a hospital? Is it just like a strip mall, you know, operating room where people pull up and they can have procedures done by a surgeon in Minnesota? In Boston, we have healthcare in Boston. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
There's a few there.
Kayleen, anything to?
No, I mean, I have to just say I'm just as amazed. I mean, it's out of science fiction, and I think it goes back to being more human and having meaningful connections all kind of comes together. And one of the barriers that we've had in healthcare is patient access. So you eliminate that barrier, and the opportunities are absolutely endless. being able to serve globally is the future I'm excited to be a part of.
It's exciting.
I was just thinking, I wonder if one of the effects of, like, I mean, it's interesting what you're saying, Kayleen, about, like, you know, AI kind of allowing, like, you know, more human interaction, allowing people to work together. I wonder if that's in some way playing a role in how we're all of a sudden, like one theme I saw this year was how, like, some of the big med techs that we had here were, you know, they're kind of innovating in how they're operating. I mean, I thought it was kind of neat when, you know, Andy Pierce from, you know, Stryker was giving his keynote. I mean, he was saying how they don't have a corporate office. They don't have their leaders and finance people aren't in a corporate office anymore. They're spread out among the businesses to interact with the people at the company and the customers of the company that are visiting those different businesses. And, you know, Penumbra's Adam, you know, Ellisor, I mean, he was talking about how they don't have they don't do an incentive structure with bonuses anymore because, you know, they realize it just incentivized people to do things that were easy, and, you know, they want to do things that are hard. You know, they want to do the great innovations over there. So, I mean, that's very cool.
Hear, hear.
No, it's really, it's, I think both were excellent cases of I think, astute leadership. And I know after the Andy Pierce interview on day one, someone asked, like, how is he not a CEO? And he is essentially a CEO of that vertical within Stryker, which is, I think he said it was $9
billion.
$13 billion. Yeah. So it is a med tech. So he is a CEO, but I think people walked, I walked away, and I know people were impressed by not only his honesty and openness, but just the real, I think,
energy.
Right. And
energy. You could just feel it.
And the whole growth mindset thing, it sounds like a throwaway line, but you can kind of see how it really does, you know, feed into everything they do. Like, they're not thinking about just the next move. They're thinking about how they're going to make four or five moves at once.
Yes.
It was really intriguing. So, but yeah, let's talk a little bit about some old style med tech. I mean, we had Medtronic's Jason Weidman here talking about the simplicity story. So how we brought a good old-fashioned interventional renal denervation product to, or old-fashioned interventional product that does renal denervation to treat hypertension. It was kind of great to hear that sort of achievement. I sat down with Nick West at Shockwave, and Shockwave obviously has accomplished a lot over 10 years. And it was interesting and just sort of how we've talked about robotic surgery sort of democratizing surgery and giving expert talents to people who may not have them. Shockwave actually did that, but in reverse, in delivering a device that was so simple for every surgeon to use that they could deliver world-class care everywhere. I mean, he said if you come and run into an interventional cardiologist who can't use a balloon, run in the other direction. I mean, that's like it's the simplest device. So any interventional cardiologist should be able to use a balloon. So great conversation with him about where Shockwave is headed. They've got a lot of different projects on track, and a lot of their next steps are coming from work that surgeons have done, off-label use of the balloons that sort of have demonstrated opportunities in different parts of the body. So it's great to see that surgeon med tech connection still going strong and still driving things forward. Kayleen, did you have any?
Well, it just reminded me actually what Steve was saying about democratizing healthcare. So, I mean, building devices that as many people as possible can use, you know, powering those devices with artificial intelligence, right, opening access. I mean, this all democratizes healthcare. So more care practitioners, even if maybe you're not trained traditionally, can help patient health. I mean, that's only a good thing. Yeah. It's a great thing.
Absolutely.
Right. It gives some teeth to the term equality of care.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. And it's great to be a part of that. Any other interesting takeaways that someone want to throw out there from you?
I'll jump in always, anytime.
Go, both feet. Go ahead.
You know, so I've been in the industry for 18 years now, and, you know, there hasn't been a lot of emphasis around women's health. And I want to just take a pause and emphasize that women's health is not just about reproductive health. You know, women's health is conditions that affect everybody. Women's health really is all health. And it's been, for nearly 20 years, very difficult to have that conversation. And it feels like 2024 has been this pivotal change from the federal government to supporting more research, to the industry really focusing on enrolling more women in clinical trials and really having an emphasis on designing medical devices for diverse anatomies, so kind of tailored tech. I had a conversation today with three leaders within this space. So we had Dr. Jennifer Jones-McMeans from Abbott Vascular. We had Dr. Sharon Tofi, who is the founder of the Beverly Hills Hernia Center, as well as the president of Hexagon Health. And then we had Dr. Asha Parikh, who is the CEO of Frontline Medical Technologies, or Frontline Technologies. And we were talking about designing devices from a cardiovascular mentality, you know, smaller vessels, critical care settings and emergency care, because women aren't the only people who get emergency care, believe it or not. And then talking about hernia repair. And there's a smaller number of women who need hernia, yes. However, the majority of women who need hernia need hernia repair, because it's not working. So this idea that we're finally able to talk about it. And Chris and I were talking about yesterday, Mr. Rogers. So one of the very famous phrases that Mr. Rogers uses is, if it's mentionable, it's manageable. And it feels like, exactly. So it feels like in 2024, we're finally mentioning it. It's becoming manageable. Where there's more eyes, more investments coming, and more people are saying, we need to open up that access, provide care, so that the women who need to be enrolled in these clinical studies can be enrolled in these clinical studies. So these surgeons who want to do these surgeries, but perhaps can't because the tools themselves don't fit their hands, are now tools are being redesigned for female anatomy. And then, again, focusing on women's health about being conditions that affect everyone, that is this snowball effect that helps everyone. And I was just thinking about it from this one session, and I know I can go on and on and on, and thank you for letting me go on, because I'm just so passionate about it. But just from this one session alone, it really struck me when we were talking about designing devices, even from the Abbott vascular mentality. We're talking about, you know, for a traditional male body. And then we're talking about, okay, well, women have different anatomies, so we have to make it smaller. And then that made me think about pediatric device design, where we have to go even smaller. So
there's so much that needs to be done there.
Exactly. So women's health is all health. And every time we think about one patient population, how we can expand, how do we design devices differently, how do we support different patient populations, it serves every type of patient population. So it was a pretty hopeful and exciting 20-year conclusion for me, Tom. Loved it.
That's great. And no, and Jill Treckle of Edwards Lifesciences, she was on the structural heart panel I led this morning, and we talked a bit about how future trials have to be more inclusion, include not only women, but minorities as well, people of color as well. And it was, to your point, when I brought up the question, she was like, I'm very glad you're bringing this up. Like, we need to talk about this more and more. So there's a demand now that this be a bigger part of the conversation.
What's interesting about, I've had that conversation a lot. A lot of what I do outside of the medical device side is I work pretty heavily with our pharma, biotech, and of course that's pretty heavy in that industry. Sure. Right now. And the various capabilities with AI to be able to have data flowing into an AI program that looks at that inclusion-exclusion criteria, where you can actually meet the various DE&I efforts that you're looking at, setting certain standards when it comes to women's health or what have you, you know, that's really where AI can play into that field as well. So that interoperability and AI and what it can do jointly to ensure that various populations that might not have, it's not that they weren't considered, but it's that they weren't as readily accessible maybe for that specific trial. Now we can adjust our focus to make sure we're appealing to that group to bring them in for said trial. I think it's really interesting where AI fits in with that.
That's a great point. I think we've been talking for about a half hour or so. I mean, any other takeaways or high moments that people want to bring up, Stephen? Anything?
Just a great week. I mean,
oh, good.
It's just a privilege to be a part of Device Talks. It's a very rewarding experience for,
go on,
for me personally and professionally. And, you know, again, my key takeaway is this little Device Talks from Boston to Device Talks West and the progress that we've made with NVIDIA and really kind of revolutionizing these AI-powered medical devices. It's been a crowning achievement, and we owe a lot of that to Device Talk. So thank you very much.
So, Steve, are you saying that you made a meaningful connection?
Yes, I would definitely. Yeah, for those out there, yes, I will give you the plug. We have made multiple meaningful connections
Absolutely.
At Device Talks, and it's been a very worthwhile investment. So thank you.
That's fantastic. No, thank you for saying that. And we're honored to be part of, to play even a small role in moving things forward like that. Chris Newmarker, we haven't covered so much. I'm scrolling through all the speakers we haven't covered, and we're not going to get to them all.
There was so much.
You should have been here.
Exactly.
I hope you feel bad if you were.
If you're feeling FOMO, there's a reason. Yeah, just the quality of the crowd here, and just. That we, had just, I think I agree. It's like meaningful.
100%, yes.
Yeah. The great connection.
Great
like
connection,
just,
yes.
Like really, I, there's so many new things I learned. I mean, we don't want to go on for hours, but I mean, this is great. I can't wait for us to, be getting back to Boston in May and to finally, we're going to be getting, Device Talks Minnesota back around my home turf in Minneapolis.
Yep, June 11th. So
June 11th, McNamara Alumni Center in the summertime.
Yeah. No,
beautiful in early June in Minnesota. There we go.
They won't.
Yeah.
No down jackets required.
Yeah.
No.
No blizzards will be there, and no one will be off to the lake just yet. So we're threading that needle.
It'll be awesome.
Yeah. No, it'll be great. All right. Well, I think this will be a great time to wrap things up. Kayleen, any final thoughts from your side? You're giving me a knowing look. I'm not sure what that means. This is
no, I feel I'm all set. Thank you. I just
okay.
I'm just okay. I will take. You've twisted my arm. No, I mean I. This is the greatest privilege of my life. Being around people who inspire me, meeting friends virtually, and then being able to meet them in person, and realize that there's nowhere else in the world I'd rather be.
Excellent. No, it's great to. Well, thank you for
awesome. Yeah,
absolutely.
And Kayleen,
totally.
Kayleen, thank you for all the help in putting this together. I get this whole thing started, and then the wheels start to fall off, and Kayleen's there to help us moving forward and keep things together. So I'm really grateful for your help, the help of our entire events team, to our marketing team, to the Mass Device editorial team. We couldn't do this without our entire WTWH family. So it's great to be able to accomplish this, and it's also great to have it done, to be honest with you.
Here.
And we start on Boston on Monday. So thanks, everyone, for joining us, and thanks for listening to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Take care, everybody.